So now I'd like to invite the panelists if they have either questions for each other or questions for our assembled group of people with expertise in various domains here. So we've heard, I think, three categories of myths and realities, if I can paraphrase a little bit, from Natalie. There were many messages in what each person gave us, but one that I took from Natalie's presentation was that the health status of linguistic minorities isn't necessarily just a matter of the linguistic and cultural variables. There may be other variables, sometimes hard to identify, but that interact with this linguistic element. Richard was telling us that the institutions that support the vitality of a community, and particularly the linguistic and cultural vitality, sometimes, however, can operate in a silo fashion independently, and that undermines ultimately the viability of the community. And I guess that interacts or intersects with an idea that Lawrence Krumeyer gave us, which was the importance of having that linguistic vitality around you. And he showed us very dramatically how health status is related to the degree to which such vitality is present or absent. And then we heard about myths of the interpreter and different situations where interpreters are needed and sometimes not provided in the right way. So I wonder if others have responses to these particular issues that were raised by our panelists. Yes?
Well, maybe just maybe another myth that I would like to put on the table and see what you think about it is the myth that, you know, but there's a fact that the English-speaking communities and French-speaking communities, the rate of bilingualism is very high, higher than the average population in Canada. So therefore, the myth would be that when it comes to healthcare services, they don't really need services in their own language because they are bilingual. Or the myth is that because they have scarce resources, they should not ask for services in their own language because there's not enough resources for translation or having a professional that speaks their own language.
So, did I understand you correctly in saying, could you just repeat the main question you were asking?
The thing is that there's the rate of bilingualism for English-speaking population in Quebec is very high. Same thing for Francophones outside of Quebec. And therefore, the myth for the healthcare providers or the healthcare administrators is that they don't have to provide services in French outside of Quebec or English in Quebec because those people are bilingual.
I mean, for me, mostly I work with the allophone community, but I mean, I think there are pockets of neglect and fueled by these misperceptions. And so in our institution, interestingly, I mean, somebody, I think French is generally available, but if I speak French to somebody, it's not the best French. You know, it's not a native speaker of French, so I do the best that I can. And so I would try to give language services in French to the best of my ability. I think I do a decent job. But you're absolutely right. There may be areas where French minorities are neglected or Anglophone ones because it doesn't come to our mind that that's a top priority language group to serve. So.
Yes, I think that what we've seen with official language minorities in Canada for Francophones outside of Quebec and Anglophones within Quebec, in the long run, both for healthcare and for education, these minorities, these official language minorities, have fought for institutions of their own. Because so for hospital French hospitals in the rest of Canada, well, in Moncton, that was very important to have a French language hospital. And of course, Montfort was a good example in Ontario. So these are, it's the idea that, you know, individual goodwill will not be enough for a lot of minorities, especially, of course, when you're dealing with healthcare, but also education and all the other domains I mentioned. And so the push for the minorities is to create stable institutions that will serve their communities. And also, of course, it is the practitioners within these institutions that are of those communities, those linguistic minorities, who also have a chance to develop their own skills and to contribute to the vitality of the communities. So, and it's not for nothing that Mohawks, you know, are quite happy to try to develop their hospital so that they can provide Mohawk language services for culturally sensitive healthcare, because that's important. So they need institutions. So institutional support is present and is needed. And of course, it's always dependent on the goodwill of the dominant majority who will or will not provide those institutions.
Thank you. Lorraine?
Hi, I'm Lorraine O'Donnell, Concordia University. Something that's striking me, I'm a historian, and among the projects I've worked on are two of the historic English-speaking communities of Quebec, the Irish and the Jews of Quebec City. Something I've observed this morning is we seem to be creating a dichotomy of ethno-cultural groups on the one hand, in other words, recent immigrants, and Anglophones. Whereas I would suggest that Anglophones are themselves composed of many ethno-cultural groups. They might be mother tongue English, but have historic roots that lead to different cultures. My question to the panelists is, do you see any implications for this in terms of healthcare delivery, mental healthcare delivery? I would suspect that an urban Irish person might have different healthcare needs or mental healthcare needs than a rural Jew or something like that, but even though they're both mother tongue English. Thanks.
Well, that's no, for sure, and Lawrence can address this as well. In cultural consultation, which is the service that Lawrence was discussing earlier today, someone may come mother tongue English, mother tongue French, but have cultural differences or just differences of tradition or religious belief or other understanding of healthcare or even health problems. And so that would, what you're addressing would be this very issue where somebody may speak perfectly to you in a language that you know well, but you still may have difficulty understanding the health issues or trying to help a person follow a certain course of treatment. So I'd say that it's an excellent statement.
Perhaps one point that I think is important is when you have a dominant majority, a Francophone dominant majority, which is there, when that dominant majority offers or maintains or guarantees services for healthcare for the Anglophone communities, it creates a context, a setting, a climate, which favors more diverse language, culturally sensitive healthcare. So it feeds in. It feeds into diversity. It feeds into pluralism of the institutions. So, and of course, because of the two official language status, you have to start with the English of Quebec and the French outside Quebec. You have to enshrine and consolidate those rights, and those are then used to push for more culturally sensitive healthcare for allophone communities from different cultural backgrounds, from more recent or immigration streams. So it's a bit like the old story, official bilingualism fed the legitimization of multiculturalism and the converse. So these two have to work with each other. And because we have institutionalized in the Constitution the status of the two official languages, that's where we start. We have to enshrine those, and then we can move on to or concurrently, and it creates that climate, and then we're talking about First Nations.
And I imagine in the next round table, we might hear something about the similar parallel issue in the French language community, where the Francophonie has many different cultural groups as well, and there are issues there. Please.
I want to thank all the panelists for a very, very stimulating set of issues, and it just brings to mind a couple of quick things I wanted to say. One is that we emphasized, both Eric and I, in our discussions, the use of interpreters. And I think that in an important way, that's not just a stopgap measure. It's about creating mainstream institutions that have diversity within them. And even though you've spoken about the need for institutional completeness or building vitality in communities having their own institutions, I think that that's potentially problematic, and it's been tried in different places. In the U.S., the idea is if you're Hispanic, you go to a Hispanic clinic and so on. And that does not create, in and of itself at least, a social space that's inclusive and that in some ways makes the extra effort to engage with diversity. So I feel, to my mind anyway, an important issue, and you can see it in the story of the evolution of the Jewish General Hospital itself, which was built by a particular community because of, racism at this institution, among other reasons, and that led to what is now an extremely diverse environment and struggling to kind of respond to that. So that was the first point. Second point is that even having said that, interpreters are not the ideal solution. The ideal solution is diversity in the workforce and people being compensated for the fact that if they speak three languages or five languages or whatever, they have extra skills and extra expertise, and they should be supported for that reality. And that has to do with the protectionism of our professions and whether people can come from elsewhere and get a job and so on. So there are a lot of other institutional issues that I think we have to address as a related part of that. Anyway, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Yes, Jennifer.
Jennifer Johnson from the Community Health and Social Services Network. And just to put into the conversation, we recently did a survey of our health networks across the province in terms of what are the priorities around health and social services. What do the community see as priorities? And seniors and youth come up on top as always, but mental health is right there, following up those priorities. And I'm particularly concerned about communities off the island of Montreal, so the 300,000 Anglophones that live in rural and remote communities who don't have, designated institutions, who, struggle to have personnel that have the language skills necessary to respond to their needs. And, I think that's something that, I just want to make sure it gets mentioned in this dialogue around, the importance of, addressing a community that is particularly disadvantaged with regards to accessing health and social services in a particular area, such as mental health, which is so language important. It's something where language is primary with regards to, identifying the issues and addressing the issues. And, I just wanted to make sure that we had that in the conversation.
Thank you very much. I think we'll take our last question and then we'll have a break. Michael.
My name is Michael Udy, and in the last couple of years I've working on two different projects, interviewed a number of what I would call ordinary members of English-speaking communities in different parts of Quebec, some healthcare and social service providers working with English-speaking clients, and also people working to promote access to health and social services. So I've heard a lot about many of these subjects. The one I wanted to comment on is the suggestion that Anglophones are more bilingual than they were as a group, although that's much less true for older Anglophones. But for those who can speak French, maybe the issue of access is less of an issue because they do have a pretty good level of French. And so I'm just summarizing what I've heard people say about this subject. If I've cut my skin and I'm going for stitches somewhere, I can do that in French. But if you are going to tell me information that's going to mean that my future is going to be really compromised and maybe I'm going to die, I'd really like to talk about this in my own language because I don't want to miss anything. I want to really understand. And when people talk about things that are also very delicate, like how did it come to be that I'm addicted to something and what is it that I could do about, there's the level, the issue of clarity, accuracy, clarity, comfort, become much, much more important. So I guess the answer seems, as I've heard it, is can I do it in French? It all depends. It depends on what's at stake.
Thank you very much. I think we'll now wrap up this first round table. We have about 10 minutes or so for a break, and then we'll reassemble for the second round table. Could the participants in the second round table just come forward so I can talk to them for a moment, please? Thank you.